Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show online at edexcellence.net. Please join me in welcoming my co-host, the Megan McCain of Education Policy, Rick Hess.
Mike, are you saying that I'm a full-figured dude? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm not. I'm just saying that you would be the kind of person to say, kiss my fat ass. In fact, I think I've heard you say that.
And I think I am a full-figured dude. I'm okay with that. I got a couple pounds here, and I'm not ashamed.
Yeah. I call you Sweet Cheeks for a reason.
Right? Oh, mm-hmm. It's good to have you back there, dog.
So I understand that I am totally dispensable. I go away for a week, and I come back and find out that you went ahead and did the podcast without me, which I'm very happy to hear. And I heard that Stafford did an excellent job.
Stafford raged. In fact, I got a whole bunch of mail saying, do we really have to get Mike back next week? Well, Stafford's tight.
It's a reasonable question. I came back, and I, of course, missed this big speech by President Obama. And I was going to go and, you know, get on the blog and go back and give it a reformometer rating to see how I thought it was in terms of education reform. And it turns out that Andy Samarick, a new colleague here at Fordham who's doing some blogging for us, had already done that too.
Well, I don't know how Andy rated it, but he did do a column where he was pretty darn enthusiastic. He was like a tween at a Jonas Brothers concert.
Yeah, I mean, Andy said that it was deserved a warm rating, which is the second highest rating that you can give anything in our system. So he thought it was a slam dunk. I don't know. I mean, I've had the benefit of now coming back and looking at it a week later. I say some of those phrases in there gave me some concern.
You know, even at the time, the next day, I think I wrote something for the Corner, which said, look, this is classic Obama. You know, calls to get past partisanship, big intention, sweet words. But if you actually look at everything, the NEA and the AFT said they love his notion of merit pay. Mm-hmm. It's not like these guys haven't spent any money yet, and I don't see a lot of evidence the money's driving the changes he talked big about. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, and I have to say, his talk about 21st century skills made me very depressed. You know, Fordham's been promoting the cause of national standards for a long time now, and it looks like there's some real momentum, this effort by Achieve and CCSSO and the National Governors Association. And yet, you know, the president referred to that initiative and explicitly encouraged them to embrace 21st century skills, which is very depressing. Fordham has to end up coming out against national standards because the standards are...
You know, I mean, it's classic Obama. It sounds good. It sounds modern. We'll see. I don't have a whole lot of confidence that it'll work out well.
All right. Well, let's get going. Lots to cover today. We'll play Pardon the Gadfly. We'll get a research minute from Amber, and we'll have some rating of that reform. Now, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Topic 1. The New York Times had a big piece this week about high school students who recently immigrated to the United States and the best way to educate them. One school in Virginia has given up on assimilating them into the larger school environment or teaching them much English, and just focuses on cramming their heads with enough information to pass the state's end-of-course exams so they can earn diplomas. School officials say this is the best way to help them succeed in society after graduation. Are they right?
You know, whether they're right or not, I don't actually have a great clue. It strikes me that I'd like to see our schools teaching American adolescents to speak English. It just strikes me as a useful and socially desirable thing. Frankly, if the implication is any district across the country should be prepared to hire folks who can teach content in any of 175 languages to offer native language instruction to each of these students in high school, that strikes me as bizarre. If it comes to this, if this is a model that the New York Times thinks sensible, let's just give these kids, you know, $3,000 or $5,000 vouchers or something and let them get on the web and get native language content instruction from people who actually speak that language back home. I have no idea why American high schools are looking for people who speak Pashtun to teach Algebra 2 to kids who are 16-year-old immigrants.
Okay, but actually the article was quite critical of this approach in many ways, you know, because it was not doing much to assimilate the kids. They talked about putting these kids almost in warehouses, totally segregated from the rest of the school environment. So, you know, this was sort of New York Times anecdote. Let's go out there and find a high school that is siphoning off these kids. But, I don't know what the right answer is here. I mean, you got a kid who's 15 or 16, just came to the country, doesn't speak the language. I don't know what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope, you know, if they came, you know, from, you know, a fairly, you know, relatively affluent background, maybe they've gone to a school that was pretty good and they actually know some things in terms of content, and so you want to help them get the diploma in Virginia that's about passing these end of course exams. I guess the implication is you can take those exams in another language. I'm not quite sure how that works. But I don't know, you know, do you have to you know, I certainly, it seems like one reasonable approach to take. It also seems like you say reasonable to say, look, our focus should be on getting those 16-year-olds to at least learn English, and then maybe they can continue their education at a community college going forward.
That's, I mean, this is just one of those. You know, and this is the problem with, right, ill-conceived accountability systems, is we got to make sure that we know what problem we're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. And in each and every case, it's probably not just mastering core content.
Okay, topic number two.
President Obama talked a lot about moving the states toward common standards in his big speech last week, and that's been Arne Duncan's tune for months now. But how hard will they push this cause from Washington? Will they, in George Will's words, quote, receive an education in the difficulty of defeating local inertia from afar?
You know, it's a good question. The Economist had a piece about this, too, and they pointed out rightly that all the president could really do is plead with states to move in this direction because the federal government doesn't have a lot of levers to make states do this sort of thing on their own. However, now Obama and Arne Duncan do have some levers that have never been had before in the terms of the stimulus money. They've got this $5 billion race to the top fund where they can basically decide which states are going to get that money and which are not. They've also got the $650 million slush fund that they could use to go out and just give money to somebody to create national standards or a national test or a national curriculum if they wanted to. Question is, are they willing to go that far? You know, there'll be some political backlash, but hey, it seems like if they're willing to, you know, cap carbon emissions, they'd be willing to do that too.
a lot of this is we just don't really have a read on how hard-nosed these guys are willing to be on anything. Then there's the question of what role we really want the feds to play in pursuing, more common standards. Personally, you know, I'm profoundly uncomfortable with the notion of the feds really getting out front or picking the design entity for a national standard. I'm much more comfortable with collaboratives of states, with two or three or four different teams emerging with a couple benchmark standards.
But here's an idea, Rick. I mean, what about multiple efforts? I mean, that seems to be the most sensible approach at this point. Mm-hmm. So you've got this ACHIEVE effort, the collaboration mm-hmm. among states. You've had some talk from Mike Casserly at the Council of Great City Schools that maybe the big cities should do something and come together and work on a set of national standards. You've got Roy Romer now heading to the College Board to head up some sort of national standards initiative there. Who knows what that means, but maybe the College Board could build on the AP test or build on other things. You've got ACT out there. I mean, I think there's multiple approaches, and we could say, look, let's start with what we've got and grow towards some sort of national approach. Mm-hmm. Topic number three, Christina.
KIPP Philadelphia is excited about Arlene Ackerman's plans to convert a bunch of her city's failing schools to charter schools and is considering trying its hand at this business. To date, it's only focused on new startups. Is this a good idea or a big mistake?
Idea or a big mistake, Rick. No wishy-washy, Rick has stuff here.
It's probably a big mistake.
It's a huge mistake.
They might want to call Edison, which tried doing this with Philly. And, you know, they also might want to take a look at the research on turnarounds in general.
Research written by people like Frederick M. Hess?
Oh, no. I mean, research done, in the business journals, looking at companies that have tried stuff like corporate reengineering and total quality management. Because it's usually the case that in those conditions where you have a pretty free hand at who you hire and how you reward people and to fire incompetence, you know, firms are pretty happy if they're bad about 300, if you succeed at these things 30 or 35% of the time. Mm-hmm. KIPP has taken full advantage of the existing greenfield in K-12. The notion that they will be able to go in and turn around these schools in the way they hope, you know, you never know for sure how these things will play out. But that's not the way I'd bet.
Yeah, I mean, didn't KIPP, they tried this in Denver a few years mm-hmm. ago, right? And there was a big controversy about this. There was a failing school to be redesigned. And they went in, but I think their stipulation was that they wanted to keep to their model of one grade level at a time. And they'd start with fifth grade. And basically, they were going to just keep the sixth, seventh, and eighth graders doing what they were doing before. Anyways, it turned out to be a mess, and they pulled out. So I don't know why they are considering this. This seems like classic mission creep. KIPP is so valuable and does such a good job at what it does in startups. There's so many places around the country that seem hungry for a new KIPP school. You know, I think this is a place for some discipline to say, mm-hmm. you know what, this is outside our realm of expertise. And by the way, it may be impossible to take schools like this and to turn them around successfully.
At least with the toolbox that KIPP brings, right? Yeah. I mean, because KIPP, if you need to hire a lot of talented, hardworking people, just finding ways to handle that in terms of the labor constraints in Philadelphia mm-hmm. and the rest of the statutory environment, you know, KIPP is able to execute its model because it doesn't have to deal with that stuff normally.
All right. That's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. We are now joined by the lovely Amber Winkler for the Research Minute. Hello, Amber.
Hello, Michael.
So I missed your research minute last week. It was very hard. I have to admit, I did not tune in from Buenos Aires, where I was, to listen to the research minute. But I understand it was a humdinger.
It was a humdinger.
So I just got to get my fill this week. What's the topic?
All right. This week we have a new Mathematica study done for IES called "The Effectiveness of Reading and Math Software Products." We hear a lot about using technology in schools, and sometimes that means having kids work on subject-specific software on computers. So this is a second-year follow-up experimental study. It examines 10 products to assess whether students who use the software outperform control students who don't. 23 districts, 77 schools involved. Students use the products an average of 30 minutes a week, so that's important to know. First-year findings were very bleak. Second-year findings don't look much better. There was mostly no measured product effect, as the analysts called it. And when they examined the individual effects of the software products, all of which are named, by the way, only one of the 10, LeapTrack, published by LeapFrog, had a positive, statistically significant effect on test scores. So it's important to remember, just a little caveat here, the school districts in the study volunteered to implement the particular products, so some of the differences in the district characteristics may relate to the product's effectiveness. Still, not good news for makers of educational software in general.
Wow. So let's start with what somebody said right away. Mm-hmm. 30 minutes a week?
That was the average.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do we really think that's a treatment likely to capture an effect?
I'm with you.
Yeah. I mean, and why is that just the average that these products are used in schools?
Well, they don't use them every week, you know, so they kind of did some statistics, but that was basically, and maybe it went up a little bit, you know.
But this is typical practice.
Now, is it dosage? Yeah. Did the 10 vendors in question kind of say this is a sufficient dosage we would expect to see an effect?
Yeah, that's a good question. All of the teachers, and it was about 95%, I think, did in fact receive training on the products, but when I read the product description, it wasn't clear to me exactly what they recommended in terms of dosage and time
spent. Right, because what listeners want to keep in mind on this stuff is it's like if you buy Bayer aspirin, and Bayer says, you know what, half a pill ought to make your headache go away. That's fine, but if Bayer says you got to take two, and you take half an hour, then you don't say Bayer doesn't work.
So was it implemented to fidelity is essentially what he's saying, and it wasn't clear in the study.
Right, but if the reality is that, you know, they say you really got to have kids on this, you know, half an hour a day in order to be effective, and that's just not realistic because they don't have the computer labs or they don't have the time for it, then that's important to know.
Yeah, and again, these experimental studies, you know, it's so hard to find.
How big an N? How many?
It was 77 schools. I didn't write down the students.
I mean, is that really enough power that we would expect?
Yeah, they said in there that they did a power analysis and they made sure that they had the proper N.
Cool.
Power analysis and proper N. Look at you guys.
We're geeking out.
We're geeking out. Sorry.
Hot stuff. But this is fair. I mean, this is we keep finding this, right? That from the Russ Whitehurst era at the Institute for Education Sciences, you do random assignment, you do it well. Most of the time, you're not going to find an effect.
That's right.
And so most of the time, the news is bad. Doesn't mean that these things don't work necessarily. It means that we can't prove that
they work.
Yeah,
and like I said, they volunteered. There was some leeway in terms of what product they were going to get randomly assigned.
So. But it also, it's also, you know, what it really says is when tossed in 30 minutes a week out of the, you know, 35 or 38 hours these kids are currently spending in school, that it doesn't have a big impact on grade 3 to 8 reading or math scores. Yeah. Right, that's real different from saying that if we use these things smart, if we design schools smart, that these things can't have a catalytic impact.
Okay, thank you, Amber. So what's the song that goes along with this?
So since LeapFrog was the only, not that we're product endorsing or anything, but since they were the only winner out of 10 products, we have Five Little Frogs by the kids' band Rafi.
Oh.
Five green and speckled frogs sat on a speckled log, eating some most delicious bugs.
Yummy.
Yum.
Gets better.
One jumped into the pool where it was nice and cool. Then there were four green speckled frogs. Goop, goop,
Oh, isn't that great?
That sucks.
Isn't that great?
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Dude, I like that
get
song.
Get back to Bruce.
Oh, come on, Rick. Come on, this is an education show. You know, there's another great song.
We're not an education show for 6 years.
I knew you would know the kids' songs.
Heard
we go.
Song, but also, went the little green frog one day. Oh, went the little green frog.
All righty.
Went the little green frog one day, and they all went. Okay. Anyways, well, you.
Mike, let me just point out that the median age of our listeners probably like 30, 35.
So. And your point is, and they probably have these great memories from summer camp.
The median age of folks who like your songs probably 30 to 35 months, baby.
I'm all about the musical variety, guys. Alrighty.
All about the musical variety. Thank you, Amber, with the research minute.
That did remind me of Frogger. Remember Frogger?
I loved Frogger. Yes. I wasn't very good at it.
Me neither. But it was kind of cool. I liked when he got squashed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's maybe why we weren't very good at it. You're supposed to not have him get squashed. This is ridiculous. Rick, this is so depressing. Nothing works. I feel like that's the answer now. We're finally doing good research, and the answer is nothing works. We should go into a different field. So we're going to start doing the healthcare gadfly show or something.
Like that. You know, what we forget is that like hardly anything works in healthcare. It's just that we do thousands of different trials, and a couple of these things seem to work. Yeah. But and all the things that do work also cause your kidneys to shut down and make you smell bad.
No, that's true. All right, but you know, it does work. Rate That Reform works.
Absolutely.
Stafford, what are we talking about today?
Well, 3 years ago, the East Stroudsburg School District in eastern Pennsylvania bought 6 classroom trailers to assist with overflow problems. Each trailer costs $46,000 and an additional $14,000 to transport and set up at the school.
Ooh, is this a math problem? 62.
It is a math problem. We're not quite there yet.
Okay.
But since, like everyone else, the school needed to cover a few costs and didn't need the trailers anymore, they decided to sell them on eBay. They hope to get between $5,000 and $10,000 for each of these trailers, which are, of course, 3 years old. Unfortunately, the brainiac who made the listing on eBay didn't put a minimum bid, and some lucky bugger got one of these $60,000 trailers for $1.
Oh,
that's right. The price of a small fries from Mickey D's dollar menu, a cold Coke from your office vending machine, or a pair of new shades from the dollar store. The district tried to back out, but found themselves bound by eBay's legally binding contract rules. And when asked if the district would sell the other trailers on eBay, the district superintendent, Rachel Heath, responded, "I don't think we'll go that route again." Yeah, I think not. So I gave this an A for problem definition because selling unneeded stuff on eBay is a great way to make some cash. But good God, is your office full of morons. The minimum bid is a key component of bidding on eBay, and they also have a help page for those that do not know how to use the website. And I wish in good conscience I could really give them an F for execution here, but really, I think the F goes to the person who hired the goober who made this mistake. eBay, not that hard.
I smell a Cooner-like pink slip in the office.
There's a pink slip coming. Who's going to take the fall for this one? This wasn't by chance in Sarah Palin's Alaska, was it?
No.
No.
Okay. Eastern Pennsylvania.
Stroudsburg.
Huh? East Stroudsburg, that's right. Because I wonder, I guess when Sarah Palin didn't actually sell the plane on eBay, she put it on eBay, but it was never sold. I guess she was smart enough to put a minimum bid price on it.
Or we could have, dude, we could have kind of cobalt that.
Oh,
how fun would it be
if
there was a Fordham jet?
We should be on the lookout for other trailers, like classroom trailers.
I want that AEI. How sweet. I want a chopper. Mm-hmm. I want to land that right on the roof over 1150.
Nice.
You can take it for your quote-unquote research that you do in Hawaii, right?
I like it. Well, that was a good one, Stafford.
That was a good one.
Thank you so much. That is all the time we have for this week. But don't worry, we will be back next week. Until then,
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net, signing off.